worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org.
I'm here with Ellen Klein, and we're talking about the process of grieving and loss that occurs in all of our lives. And if you'd like to be in touch with his work and know more about him, you can go to his website, allenklein.com. That's A-L-L-E-N Klein, K-L-E-I-N.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. And Ellen, the book is divided into five different segments.
Right.
Can you say a little bit about each segment?
Well, you know, first of all, I thought if Kubler-Ross had five steps, five stages, I want five stages. But mine all begin with L. So losing. And we just talked about that in the last segment, about kind of acknowledging the loss, because you can't move on till you acknowledge it. And then the second is learning. And I think we touched a little about that I believe loss is a gift. From every loss, we learn. We learn, if nothing else, how precious life is. That we need to appreciate what we have right now.
Hopefully that's so, that we wake up to that. You talk about a story about how there is the preciousness of life surrounding us all the time, and we don't know. Mm-hmm. And you really give wonderful examples. One of the examples you give is the famous violinist, master violinist Joshua Bell, who is playing out of a busy subway entrance in New York City. And describe what happened.
Yeah, and he's playing, and people are just passing by one after the other and not realizing that this is probably one of the greatest violinists in all the world.
And they're rushing forth in their life with their blinders on.
Not even listening to the music, just passing right by this incredible person playing an incredible violin.
I think that there's a YouTube of that I've seen.
Yes, I think there is.
It's just amazing. Yeah. And he is amazing. But that's, you're saying that when there is a point in our grief that we need to open up our blinders and see the preciousness.
And we can learn. That's part of our learning process, you know. One of my teachers, Ken Keyes Jr., said, to want what you don't have is to waste what you do have. Mm-hmm. So if you're focusing on the loss, yes, it was difficult. Yes, and you're missing that person. But to keep focusing on that is you're not getting what you're not enjoying what you already have.
You have an analogy that is very graphic for me, and you talk about, like, in that focusing on what you don't have is like focusing on the emptiness, on what is not there.
Right.
And you mentioned something about if you go near a river and you pick up a rock near the river, and it has a space. Can you say something about that?
Yes, it has a little gully or something. You know, you've displaced the rock, and what happens is the water fills in now. You know, it's
so nature doesn't like emptiness.
Exactly, yeah. And even in your life. See, what I found in my life when Ellen died, there was this emptiness. There was this vacuum. I didn't know what was going to come to fill it. But looking back, what came to fill it was my passion to tell people how humor could help them get through life.
Yes.
I mean, I almost failed speech in college. I got a D, I think. And now in my keynote speeches and workshops, I get up and speak. I've spoken to as many as 1,500 people in one room. I couldn't do that years ago, but and you know, when I first start doing it, even now, I get where I speak. That's okay. But I focus on my message that we need to lighten up, folks, that we've, gotten too heavy. We need to lighten up even during loss, that we will get through this. Things change, that you can move on, that this could be a gift to you. I mean, all those lessons.
So that's the learning. And then that was the second. And the third one.
So there's losing, learning, letting go. And I'm sure other people you've interviewed maybe talked about the Zen story of two monks who are walking down the road.
Oh, mention that. It hasn't been told in a long time.
Oh, really? Good, because it's one of my favorite
Me
stories.
Too.
Two monks are walking down the road, and they come to a river, and there's a woman standing there wanting to cross the river. And so one of the monks goes up to her and picks her up and carries her across the river and puts her down, and the monks go on their way. About a mile down the road, the monk that did not pick up the woman turned to the other and said, "How can you possibly pick up this woman? We're supposed to be celibate. We're not supposed to even look at a woman. How can you possibly pick her up?" And the monk that picked up the woman said, "You know, I put that woman down a mile back. Are you still carrying her around with you?" And how often, whether it's loss or other stuff in our life, we carry that around, and I think that just gets in the way of us living.
That takes us to the natural subject when talking about letting go, is the subject of forgiveness and forgiving. Mm. What can you say about forgiveness?
Oh, God. Forgiveness is one of the greatest things we can do for others, for ourselves, for the person we lost. A lot of people think, well, why did you die before me, you know,
or why did you leave me with
why
this?
Why did you leave me this way? You know, I think forgiveness could be the greatest thing someone can do after a loss. And forgive themselves, too, because often people who are working with a loved one who's ill or dying think, oh, I could have done more. Or if only I went to the bakery, you know, in the car, it would have been me that was killed and not my wife or my child or whatever. So I think if we don't forgive, it just stops us. It just, you know, it's letting go. We need to let go. And one of the powerful ways is to forgive ourselves and others.
So forgiving the person who died, forgiving ourselves, that's a big one.
That's
because
a
we
very
forget
big one. Oh,
that
yeah.
piece of forgiveness
oh, yeah. Yeah,
that we
yeah,
kind
yeah.
of beat ourselves up and about all the things that we didn't do or didn't say or did say or whatever it is. So
right.
how can we rectify
well,
that?
I think you know, and I think I did this when Ellen was dying. How can she leave me? Why was this happening to me? How could she do this to me, leaving me with a 10-year-old, you know? This wasn't in our script. We didn't get married, you know, for her to die, you know.
Yes.
All of this goes through your head, of course. And then I don't know that I consciously forgave her, but I think by taking the lessons I learned from her, particularly about humor, and sharing that with the world, I think that was my way of forgiving her for leaving. It's kind of keeping her memory going. But I guess you can start a diary or, you know, a journal, I guess it is, and write all the things. You know, I'd have lists. I'd have forgiving that person, forgiving the people that didn't come to the funeral or never called me, or,
right.
you know, all
yeah.
forgiving yourself for not doing stuff.
Right.
And let me just share with you, I do a number of quotation books, and in one of my books, there's a quote by Dale Carnegie that talks about when we don't forgive, the other person doesn't know this. We are really hurting ourselves.
Yes.
And so I got this letter from this woman, don't know her, just a letter saying, it was a 2-page letter, she was raped when she was a teenager, and for 50 years she never told anyone. And she said it was just eating away at her. And then she discovered this quote of how forgiving other people and, you know, the Dale Carnegie quote, how it's hurting her and not the rapist, you know.
Right.
They don't even know. So she said, I took that quote, I put it all over where I could see it every day. And she said, it has given me power to take back my life. Just that one quote.
Your book is filled with just wonderful, inspirational quotes that speak to us. And one of them that I want to read, because you quote Eckhart Tolle, and actually there are two kind of together that I wrote down. One is Ann Landers, who I also loved. I don't think anybody's replaced her.
Yeah.
She was a wise woman. She said, hanging on to resentment is letting someone you despise live rent-free in your head. I love that one.
Yeah, and that's very much like the Dale Carnegie one.
Yes, exactly.
They're getting power over you.
Yes.
They don't even know it.
They don't even know it.
But if you forgive, and
right,
you can let that go.
The other one that was very powerful is Eckhart Tolle, whatever you think people are withholding from you, give it to them. Soon after you start giving, you will start receiving. That's a big one, Alan, because when someone's withholding, or even they died, and that's the biggest kind of withholding.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever it is that you think that they're holding back from you, you give to them. What a big one.
Right. I've done 8 quotation books. You mentioned one in the introduction, Inspiration for a Lifetime, or Change Your Life, A Little Book of Big Ideas. I love doing those because people tell me how the one little quote, like the one from Eckhart Tolle, could change their life. Or the woman that told me the Dale Carnegie quote, changed her life. Words are so powerful. And so whatever words we're feeding ourselves when someone's died or dying, we need to kind of look at that. What are we saying to ourselves in that point?
And it just occurs to me that, like with the quotes, to have that quote kind of go in and really change our life, which I feel, as you just said, it can happen. It can happen in a moment of just the right. But it's also to be a gift to us and to be that inspiration, there has to be a kind of inner soil that's receptive to it on some level, don't you feel?
I think you're right. And I wish I could give some compost to people's soil, which maybe is what I'm doing. But I think it's got to come from the person. You can't. My father was always very negative. He would always see the half empty glass rather than the half full. I realized it wasn't until he was actually very much older and probably a couple of years from his dying that I've been trying to change him all my life. And it didn't work, and I was angry about that. And as soon as I stopped trying to change him and just took him for who he was, almost like giving him the gift that was, making me angry.
And you didn't even do it overtly. He didn't even know. It was like an attitude change.
No, it was
change.
Just the thing that I just started to change. And I felt so much more love towards him and love coming back from him. Now, why did that change in me? How did that happen? I wish I could tell. I don't know.
I know. I wish I could, too. But there seems to be a kind of readiness at some point. And that's why it's important to have these tools around, like these books of quotes or whatever it is, or friends saying asking the right question at the right time. That's very helpful. I'm here with Alan Klein, and he's the author of Learning to Laugh When You Feel Like Crying, Embracing Life After Loss. And if you'd like to be in touch with him, you can go to his website, alanklein.com. And that's A-L-L-E-N, Klein, K-L-E-I-N.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. My name is Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Alan Klein, and we were talking about your father. You described him as he was not exactly a positive thinker.
Very negative.
Very negative. Okay, I didn't want to say that. But anyway, in your book, you have an anonymous quote, which I just think is so powerful for us all to hear these reminders. It is, "Watch your thoughts, for they become your words. Watch your words, for they become actions. Watch your actions, for they become habits. Watch your habits, for they become character. Watch your character, for it becomes your destiny." That's a powerful...
And it all starts with what? Words.
And it all starts with thoughts.
Watch
your words, watch your thoughts,
yeah.
Because then they start to come out of your mouth.
Right, right. And how many people, they just like spit out, you know, they don't even think, it just keeps coming. And anyhow.
And so I know what you're talking about people who are, there's another quote in the book. I don't remember exactly who it was. Maybe James Clavell. It takes more energy, or it's harder to be positive than it is to be negative. I mean, it's negative is kind of a natural kind of river flowing downstream.
Yeah, I don't think so in nature, but I think in human beings, you know, we focus so much on negative.
I mean, I think we're reinforced. Our culture is reinforced for that negative.
Yeah, you try to hear some good news, and it's very difficult.
Right, except for fluffy stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, like, oh, they rescued a cat, or
yeah,
puppy,
yeah,
you
exactly.
Know,
but, well, they have to try to balance. They don't do it very well.
No.
Yeah, I mean, the world through human being eyes seems very negative. You know?
Right.
And like I'm looking. You know, we talked about death and dying. It's almost a positive thing if you look at nature. You know, there's the beautiful trees, beautiful leaves, and then what happens in the fall? The leaves fall, they go in the ground to nurture the trees, so next spring all those beautiful leaves can come out again. And so I'm not sure, because I think people are like that. You know, we're here for a little bit, and we leave something behind to nurture the next generation. Very much like nature. So I don't see like death as a negative thing in that way. I think it's like nature's way of balancing. I mean, imagine, Justine, if we never died, what the world would be like.
Well, describe the world as you would see it if we didn't die.
Well, with the not enough food to feed everyone right now. So imagine if we never died, there'd be not enough housing. There'd just be, I don't know, you probably couldn't walk down the street as big as we are.
Overcrowded, so definitely overcrowded.
I mean, and no one would have, not everyone would have a job, because there'd be, you know, too many people to...
But besides all of that, there's something about the preciousness of life, because there is death.
Yeah.
Would we,
when, you know, I have a deadline to write a book, or, you know, you wouldn't get anything done if you live forever. Right? Because I can do it in 200 years. Why do I?
We're a great species for procrastination,
right,
aren't
so
we?
Why do it now? So, that, you know, it's like, I don't know, it's like death kind of makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Yes, it's difficult. Yes, it's sad when we lose a loved one. But it's part of life. It's
right.
Not something that we don't know is going to happen. So.
Yes. Going back to the five sections of your book,
losing.
That was the first one.
And then we can learn from the loss.
Right.
And then to get to the living and laughter, we need to start letting go.
Right.
And then the fourth one is living again. We can start living again. And we talked about, if you don't start living, if you keep grieving, then two lives are lost.
I will have to mention another quote you use. This is a Will Rogers quote. He was a great humorist who died much too young. He said, "Don't let yesterday use up too much of today. Live your life today before it becomes yesterday."
Right.
So, isn't that great?
Yeah, it's wonderful.
I mean,
So to start living again after the loss, it's so important. Like you said, to get out, to do stuff, to find something you love doing. Because those things didn't go away when someone you love died. Those that are still there, you just put them aside.
Now, if we can't get to laughter, if that's not our thing yet, there is something that you suggest, and talk about the magic of smiling.
Smiling. You know, you're right, because sometimes you smile. First of all, you connect with other people when you're smiling. There's all scientific evidence. I don't know if I have that in the book or not. That when you smile, you're helping your immune system. There's all scientific evidence about that. But smiling is an international language, so you don't have to, like, comfort anyone. You can just maybe smile with them, you know, with your words. You don't have to comfort them. If they don't speak your language, you can smile and they smile back. It's just a way of connecting with other people.
You know, I have an organic food store that I go to, and they advertise that they have very helpful employees, and it's so true. They have trained these people, or some sort of indoctrination, or some sort of, I don't know what they've gone through, but these people are smiling all over the store. These people are smiling. You go to the checkout stand, they are smiling. You go to the counters and they'll ask how they can help you, and they have big smiles. It makes such a difference. I want to be in that store.
You know, waitresses report they make a higher amount of tips when they're smiling than those that don't smile. And I love it. You're reading some of the quotes. I'm not sure it's in the book, but a smile is a light on your face to let someone know you're at home.
Oh, nice. Very nice. And you don't have to feel it all the way down to your toes. It's just a matter of moving the muscles.
Right.
So say something about that.
Well, in my workshop, sometimes we get into smiling, and I say, all you have to do is take a pen or a pencil, hold it the long way, push it back in your mouth. You can't see this on radio, but push it back in your mouth, take that out, and keep that position.
Like you're biting it.
Yeah.
But
so
pushing
you
it back in your teeth.
You forced your face to smile, even if you don't feel like smiling.
Yeah. And something physiologically changes.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You know, I don't know. I think smiling, like, lifts you up when you're down.
Right.
So consciously remember to smile.
Right. Exactly.
Again, not to cover up stuff, but just to help you to get along.
You say, Alan, what you tell yourself about your loss is a good indicator of how you will recover from it.
Mm.
What do you mean by that statement?
Mm. Well, we kind of touched a little on this. You know, like people say, well, how could that person have left me? You know, why is this happening to me? All of that, again, it's like, what are you telling yourself about the loss? When Ellen died, I was probably pretty negative, but then I realized this was an opportunity for me to grow, to move on, to see the world differently, to contribute more to the world than I have been.
And one of the things that you did, pretty soon after the death, you took with your daughter. You changed your longitude and latitude. You did something that you've never done before.
Right.
And talk
see,
about that.
See, my daughter, you know, we were both moping around. And, again, it's something in me I said to Sarah, we need an adventure. We need to do something, you know, out of the ordinary just to get our mind off of it. And so we took a trip to Alaska. It was on the ferry system. So you were there and then you got off and we did a whitewater rafting trip, which the very day before, this company had been in business like a year and a half, 2 years. The day before, one of the rafts overturned and they had to helicopter people out.
Ooh.
And so they didn't know if they were going to do it. We were the first ones down the river the next day.
Oh, wow.
And they said, we'll keep you posted. And instead of us like, oh, yeah, we don't want to go now, we were like, oh, no, we want to do it. They can't cancel.
Yeah.
And they actually let us go, and it was a thrill, you know. And we took a seaplane ride and landed in the middle of this black light, and there were bears on the mountain.
Oh, my gosh.
It was, and my daughter's favorite thing was seeing the puffins in the water. And we went on a little boat that stopped right by a glacier and slept there overnight, and all night long the glacier would crack and the boat would move, and a train into Canada. And it was just incredible. And she still talks. She's 44 now. She still talks about that trip and the puffins. And it really changed. It's not, you know, we talked about Mommy, we talked about Ellen for many, many years. We still do. It's not that we put that out of our thinking. It's just we needed something to bring our spirit back again, because we were pretty down. And so I think people need to find something maybe they haven't been doing, something they've always wanted to do. Maybe that person, they do it because the other person never wanted mm-hmm. to fly or take a trip or whatever it is.
Maybe learn to play an instrument.
Exactly.
Pick up the ukulele.
Exactly. And so that I think really helped my daughter and I get through that loss.
Yes, yes, I'm sure it did. So,
And one other thing that I just, it really bonded us together.
Yes.
It was such, for a father and a daughter to bond, that was just incredible.
Oh, yes, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Ellen, it's just been my pleasure being with you today. Thank you so much for being part of New Dimensions.
Well, thank you. This has been great and way too short.
It's true. I've been here with Ellen Klein. He is the author of Learning to Laugh When You Feel Like Crying, Embracing Life After Loss, as well as many other books. So check him out. Go to his website, and his website is ellenklein.com, ellenklein.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. My name is Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3422.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over 4 decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support, and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hi, I'm Dr. Jude Currivan, author of The Cosmic Hologram, Information at the Center of Creation. And next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about the unified nature of reality.
You are now listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Simon Fraser University in Burnaby, British Columbia. We strive to provide perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media. If you'd like to know more about us, check out our website at cjsf.ca.